Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the earnings conference call for Q3 FY 2025 hosted by Piramal Enterprises Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. The results material has been uploaded on the company's website, and you may like to download and refer to them during the discussion. The discussion today may include some forward-looking statements based on the management's expectations that are subject to uncertainty and changes. These must be viewed in conjunction with the risks that the business faces. On the call today, we have with us Mr. Ajay Piramal, the Chairman, Mr. Anand Piramal, Director, Mr. Rupen Jhaveri, Group President, Mr. Jairam Sridharan, CEO, Retail Lending and MD, PCHFL, Ms. Upma Goel, CFO, and Mr. Ravi Singh, Head of Investor Relations, Strategy and Sustainability. I now hand the conference over to the Chairman, Mr. Ajay Piramal, for his comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you all for joining us today for the Piramal Enterprises earnings call. Before we get into the quarterly results, I would like to highlight the macro backdrop as we see for our businesses. India's economy has been facing headwinds. Moderating investment growth, tightening liquidity, and expensive long-term capital are slowing India's economic activity. FY 2025 GDP growth is expected to be at 6.4% compared to 8.2% in the last year. However, I am certain that these short-term challenges will ease reasonably soon, aided by policy support. We expect domestic demand to gain strength and a revival in public capex on infrastructure. As we look back at our own performance in the third quarter of the current year, some key trends stand out. The business mix continues to steadily shift in favor of growth business, which comprises retail and wholesale 2.0. Growth AUM now accounts for 87% of our total AUM versus 34% in March 2022. With this changing mix, the consolidated AUM growth and margins are getting stronger. In the Q3 FY25, our total AUM grew by 16% year-on-year versus the 15% growth guidance for FY25. And consolidated business NIM also improved 60 basis points Q-on-Q with this mix change. The legacy discontinued book rundown is on track, with AIF recoveries coming in on expected lines. The legacy AUM was down by 1,713 crores quarter-on-quarter to 10,353 crores. These are now 13% of total AUM versus 21% at the start of the year. We reconfirm bringing this book down to less than 10% of total AUM by March 2025. In this quarter, we recovered 551 crores of the AIF book, leading to a gain of 376 crores. This puts the nine-month gain of AIF at 557 crores. We have used these gains to build buffer and provide for legacy AUM rundown in Q3 and the rundown expected over coming quarters. We expect further significant AIF recoveries in the last quarter of FY25 and in 26. Amid a worsening asset quality environment for the sector, We are encouraged by our portfolio's performance. Delinquency trends for the overall retail portfolio have been stable in a narrow range during last 3 years. Secured products form 78% of our retail AUM. Wholesale 2.0 has maintained its 100% collection efficiency. The credit cost for growth businesses was at 1.9% versus 1.6% in Q2 of FY25. Retail's operating performance continues to strengthen. AUM yield is stable, and fee income has expanded over the last 3 quarters. More importantly, OPEX to AUM is down 200 basis points in 7 quarters to 4.5%. Pro forma, the PBT ROA of growth businesses was at 1.4%. This is a similar level as in the first half of FY25. The capital and liquidity position of the company continues to be strong. Our capital adequacy stands at 23.7%, and we have cash and liquidity of more than 8,000 crores. As a further boost to our balance sheet, we announced earlier in the month that PEL, through its subsidiary, will become eligible to receive an estimated amount of US$140 million, subject to final closing adjustments, expected to receive in the financial year 2026. This is in connection with deferred consideration from the sale of Piramal Imaging. The company may also receive further amounts in subsequent years from any eligible profits and future earnouts relating to the imaging group, subject to a maximum of $200 million, inclusive of the above $140 million. Moving on to the proposed merger of PEL into PCHFL, with reference to application of PCHFL conversion into the NBFC ICC, RBI has directed us to submit the COI with a new name, namely Piramal Finance Limited, and revised MOA altering the main object clause in line with the intended business of NBFC ICC. The application for reservation of name change is being filed with ROC. Another application for issuance of NOC for merger of PEL into PCHFL is under review with RBI. We expect to complete the merger process, including the NCLT approval, by September 2025. To conclude, while the external growth environment and asset quality climate have indeed moderated in FY25, we are encouraged that we are on track to meet or do better than the targets we set for ourselves at the start of the year on business growth, business mix, and operating performance of the growth business. Our focus will stay on sustaining the superior business growth while keeping a tight control on portfolio quality and expanding the profitability through margins, fee, and OPEX ratios. With this, I now hand over to Jairam and Upma to discuss our business and financial performance.
Thank you, Chairman, sir. Let me start with a discussion on our retail lending business. In the third quarter of FY25,
Are you clear? You're not clear to me, Jairam. I don't know if the voice is clear to others.
Sagar, are you able to hear clearly?
There's a lot of ambient noise.
Sagar?
Your line is coming up clearly, sir.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. In third quarter FY25, our retail AUM grew by 37% year-on-year and reached a total of 59,093 crores. Disbursements for the quarter stood at 8,362 crores, up 9% year-on-year. disbursements in unsecured products were slowed down and were down 12% YOY versus 24% YOY growth for the secured products. Our flagship mortgage businesses comprising home loans and LAP grew by 35% year-on-year to an AUM of 40,027 crores and in our account for 68% of retail AUM. Our mortgage book has exhibited robust asset quality in the last 2 years, and at present, the 90-plus delinquency ratio is 0.5% in housing loans and 0.4% in loan against property. Other retail products also demonstrated robust AUM growth, with used car loans up 119% year-on-year, salaried personal loans up 111% year-on-year, and business loans up 37% year-on-year. In business loans, the microfinance AUM was roughly flat with a 10% AUM growth YOY, and the unsecured business loans AUM was up 49% YOY. Digital loans, which we had put some brakes on about a year ago, saw AUM and disbursements both down, with AUM down 25% and QOQ and 49% YOY on that metric. The asset quality side, the retail portfolio remains healthy and stable. 90 plus delinquency at 0.8% is slightly up, but is within the narrow range we have maintained over the last 3 years. We believe that our diversified multi-product portfolio lends this stability even as different products undergo their own cycles. In our presentation, if you look at slides number 19 and 20, these slides show the 90-day past due trends over the last 3 years, and they also show that the vintage risk trends for those tranches that have been booked over the last 3 years. Within unsecured, you will notice that microfinance, which we report as part of the business loan segment, has seen sharp deterioration in the last 4 quarters. Microfinance 90 days past due delinquency is at 5.5% versus virtually nothing 5 quarters ago. Microfinance is about 2% of our retail AUM. The rest of the products continue to witness benign delinquency trends. Credit card costs in the secured lending business remain largely unchanged. Within unsecured products, credit cost was a tad higher in Q3 versus Q2, but with a lower gradient than in the first half. And whatever delta is there is largely driven by microfinance. In our unsecured portfolio overall, we have been making over the last few quarters 4 key shifts. In our customer selection strategy. Number one, we are moving towards more branch-based origination versus digital origination. Number two, we are moving more towards salary versus business customers. Number three, we are moving more towards cross-sell and away from new originations. And finally, number four, we are emphasizing a little bit of a mix shift towards lower risk return, higher ticket cases than what we used to do in the past. Our data show that these choices are making a meaningful, favorable impact on the portfolio, and you will see some reference to this on slide number 20. Overall, we expect retail credit costs to remain range-bound in line with the longer-term guidance that we have offered in the past. On slide 14, which is our slide on customer franchise and cross-sell, you will see that our customer franchise grew by 24% year-on-year to 4.5 million. We have been able to capture a sizable portion of our customer originations for future cross-sell opportunities. In the third quarter, the share of cross-sell rose meaningfully in unsecured disbursements in line with the 4 strategic shifts that I mentioned before. This, we believe, will also aid in reduction of delinquencies and credit costs in the unsecured business in the future. From a distribution strategy standpoint, we now have a network of 514 branches, establishing a strong presence across 607 districts in 26 states. As highlighted in the previous quarter, the pace of branch opening has been moderated to 5 to 10 branches per quarter versus 20 to 30 branches per quarter that we were opening earlier. On slides 15 and 16, we have shown the improvement in our productivity metrics. You can see clearly that productivity on a per branch basis and a per employee basis continue to improve across our network. Our branch vintage mix is also maturing, and we are widening the product reach across the network, making sure that more and more products are available from every branch that we have open. If you look at slide 21, you will see the trend of our OPEX ratio. This is a very important operating metric for our return portfolio, our return profile. And you will see that over the last several quarters, we have consistently reduced the OPEX to AUM, which now stands at 4.5% at the end of third quarter FY25, down from 4.7% in the previous quarter and from 6.5% in the fourth quarter of FY23. We aim to continue this trend in line with our long-term guidance of 3.5% to 4%. On the same slide, on the left-hand side, you will also see that the AUM yields have been very stable in retail after a mild dip in the first quarter due to the accounting policy change on processing fee. Now, that accounting policy change has been absorbed, and slowly the retail fee is expanding to catch up with the new steady state. Underlying cash fee collection has remained unchanged or improved in this period, and the reporting fee is now just catching up. Slide number 12 talks a little bit about our emerging new strategies on the liability side and a little bit on the asset side. To touch on the liabilities once here, we have made a strong start in the direct assignment and co-lending programs. It's a big part of our liability strategy now. We now have 12 DA and co-lending partners, including the largest PSU bank in the country and two of the top three private sector banks. The momentum on new partnerships in DA, co-lending, and new channels such as CSCs and digital has sustained. Most recently, we announced partnerships with RBL Bank and MobiQuick. We have a meaningful number of similar tie-ups in the pipeline as we speak as well. The retail AUM is now almost at 60,000 crores, and we expect scale-up of our multi-product retail strategy to continue at a healthy pace, even as portfolio quality remains a very big area of focus. Simultaneously, operating leverage will continue to improve, expanding our profitability profile. With this, I want to move to the wholesale lending bit. My colleague Yash has been kept away due to pressing personal commitments, unfortunately. So I'm going to channel Yash's thoughts and share with you the state of our wholesale lending business. During the quarter, we disbursed 2,075 crores in wholesale 2.0, a YOY increase of 24%. We continue to see faster than expected repayments in this portfolio. And so AUM grew by 60% YOY to 8,916 crores and 13% QOQ. Repayments are happening across both the CMML and the real estate lending businesses. This indicates better than expected performance of the book, which continues to benefit from economic tailwinds across corporate and real estate sectors. Since the inception of the new wholesale lending business, we have had 100% collection efficiency and have not experienced any delinquency in the portfolio. The portfolio has an average ticket size of 77 crores and an effective interest rate of 14.4%, showing a well-balanced asset duration and diversification. Encouraged by this performance and by market tailwinds, we will continue to build a granular, high-quality, profitable portfolio in a calibrated manner. On the legacy side, the legacy AUM reduced by 1,713 crores quarter-on-quarter to 10,353 crores. Thus, in the 9 months of FY25, we have achieved a reduction of 4,219 crores in this book. In this process, over this 9 month period, we have taken a haircut of around 24%. This proportion is similar to the haircut proportion that we have taken while reducing the book from 43,000 crores to 14,500 crores between FY22 and 24. In other words, our haircut ratios continue to remain steady at around the 24-25% kind of mark. We continue to work on paring down the portfolio through a combination of organic cash flows, refinancing, asset sales, and accelerated repayments. Based on all the work in progress on some of the larger legacy asset rundowns, we feel confident that we will meet our target of bringing the legacy AUM to less than 10% of total AUM by March 2025. In this third quarter, we recovered 551 crores in the AIF book with P&L gains of 376 crores. We expect further significant gains from this AIF book in the fourth quarter and in FY26. With that, I hand over the call to Upma to walk us through the financial performance.
Thank you, Jairam. Now moving to our financial performance. In Q3 FY25, we reported a consolidated net profit of 39 crores. Profit before tax, including AIF gains and associate income, stood at 91 crores. 100 crore quarter-on-quarter reduction in profit before tax was primarily on account of two elements. First one is reduction in our non-core income in Q3, that's 42 crores gain on sale of property and 20 crores dividend income. Another area is 30 crores lower profits from our fund and the insurance JV business. In comparison to Q2, book taxes increased by 25 crores from 27 crores to 52 crores in Q3. This is primarily on account of higher profits at PL standalone. Book taxes are expected to be reversed in NCLT order for merger in case the order is received on or before the tax filing date for FY25. Our pro forma PBT for growth business stood at 212 crores, which translates to PBT ROAUM of 1.4%. In this quarter, while calculating pro forma financial ratios for individual businesses, we further simplified the business-wise cost of fund methodology. We now use same cost of funds for all the assets, which is same as the company cost of funds. This change has no impact on consolidated ratios. For growth business, this has led to 50 basis points reduction in the cost of funds, including equity, which currently stands at 7.1%. Had we used similar method in first two quarters of FY25, the cost of funds in Q1 and Q2 would have been lower by 50 basis points versus the reported pro forma numbers. Our total GNPA and NNPA ratio stands at 2.8% and 1.5% respectively. Our net worth stood at 26,924 crores with a capital adequacy at 23.7% on consolidated balance sheet basis. Our cost of borrowing stood at 9.2%, marginally higher by 10 basis points versus quarter two. We are actively diversifying our borrowing mix and our securitization and international borrowing share has now increased to 23% from 6% in December 23. Our fixed to floating rate debt mix has improved to 42-58. The fixed floating gap between assets and liabilities has now been mostly neutralized to align the balance sheet better with the declining rate environment. With these remarks, I would now like to open the floor for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question comes from Avinash Singh from MK Global Financial Services Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. A couple of questions. First one, if I'm going to legacy book. So on legacy book, if I see quarter has seen close to 1,700 crore kind of a runoff. And if I look at your credit cost overall and adjust for the 287 crores of credit cost in retail, and then also look at how the provision in this legacy book has moved, it suggests that, on this 1,700 crore rundown, the total provision coming closer to 700 odd crores. So that broadly translates to kind of a 40 odd percent. And the remaining, that is close to 10,000 crore that's left. Of course, we are provided 18%, but typically this will be kind of a bit difficult accounts than whatever we have sold over the last couple of years, almost 43,000 to 10,000 now. In this 1,700 crore, whatever runoff has happened, the provisioning had been lower, if at all. If you can help me with this math on this part. Second, this more for kind of understanding the accounting. If I see that, the detail, thanks for that disclosure, the Excel that's available, the DA income of 100 crore for the quarter has been kind of added into, that added into the income piece or interest income piece as given the exchange format, and then of course 100 has been adjusted towards the cost of or provisioning cost. So how does this account work? In the semi PNL, where does this 100 crore appears? Because typically there also it should be part of that some income. Okay, thanks.
Okay, I'll let Upma answer the second part of your question. Let me take the first part, Avinash. Thanks for your question. So the legacy provisioning math is the following. See, 1,713 crores is the reduction in the legacy book. We mentioned that in the 9 months, the haircut overall has been about 24%. Actually, if you just look at the quarter, the haircut is close to 30%. Right? So roughly 30% haircut on a 1,700 crore reduction. So motamoti 450 crores is a motamoti in that range is kind of the haircut that we have taken in the legacy book, of which 150 crores has been funded from pre-existing provisions. So if you just look at the provisioning pool last quarter to this quarter on the legacy assets, you will see that it has reduced by 150 crores. So essentially, we have used 150 crores from legacy assets and another 300 crores new provisions we have created. So that's kind of the math, and the rest of it is coming from the growth book. So you see about 600 and change of that, about 300 and change comes from the legacy book, and about 300 comes from the growth book, and the legacy book kind of 300 odd is motamoti just getting netted off by the 300 odd increase in the AIF that you see below the line. That's kind of the very conceptual math on provisions for how the legacy book comes out. So legacy book quarter three about a 30%. Haircut total for 9 months, about a 24% haircut. That's kind of the situation. And the 2 years before that, also 24% haircut. That's kind of the math so far. Last quarter, legacy book haircut was quite low, so that's why 9 months is only coming to 24%. But that's how it is. 9 months ka total is 24% haircut, the same as what it was the prior 2 years. So I hope I was able to address that question. Upma, the second question.
Yeah. On the second question of DA income of 100 crores, which is being added into the interest income, that's part of the, as per the IR disclosure. In the SEBI page, this is coming under net loss on derecognition of financial instruments. Reason being, the moment we'll sell the book exits from our books, and that's how it is clubbed under the net loss on derecognition of financial instruments.
It's shown as a negative item there.
Yeah, thanks. That's very clear. Jairam, on the first, your question part, where I'm kind of losing track, that there has been a utilization of 200 odd crores from your management overlay as well. So the credit cost, is coming in the PNL is closer to this 548 odd crores, because 100 crore, of course, is the adjustment code, this BAP that I believe. So 548 crore kind of is coming from, this thing.
There is no change management management overlays here. What has happened is there was a class of provisions that was created where there were a few assets against which that pool of provisions was created. But उस पूल में बाकी सारे एसेट पहले ही बंद हो चुके हैं, तो एक ही एसेट बचा हुआ था. तो वो जो पूल है जिसके अगेंस्ट ये प्रोविजन रखी हुई थी, उस पूल में सिर्फ एक ही एसेट रह गया था. जब वो एसेट पे इस क्वार्टर व्हेन वी मेड प्रोविजंस, वी एसेंशियली यूज्ड दैट प्रोविजन एज वेल, राइट, इनटू दैट कैटेगरी. सो नो, लाइक देयर इज नो जनरल ओवरले फॉर मैनेजमेंट दैट वॉज देयर विच इज गॉटन यूज्ड अप. इट एसेंशियली बिकॉज द पूल ओनली हैड वन एसेट, इट वॉज इफेक्टिवली a specific asset provisioning that was there. But when we show the specific asset provisioning for stage 2, we were not counting that. So that's probably the math that you're talking about.
So basically you are saying that your 150 crore provision has reduced in, legacy book. And that is, in addition, you have used this 200 crore that now is part of somewhere here. So 350, so that is where I'm kind of losing a bit of a track.
Correct. No, your math so far is correct. The specific asset provisions, maybe what I said is not clear. There are specific asset provisions of about 2,000 crores that were there against the legacy assets, right? That 2,000 crores is now down to some 1,850 crores or something like that, right? So those specific assets, 150 crores consumption is there. Then there was this other thing which is not, we were not counting as part of the 2000, right? But that pool of provisions only had one asset against it remaining, right? And that was a legacy book provisions only, that it was not getting counted. So only one asset was left. So when we were making provisions against that one asset this time, we ended up using or converting that to a specific asset provision. So nothing has really changed. We just changed the nomenclature of that from general provision to specific provision.
Yeah. So then you are consuming 200 plus 150, that's 350, and then 300 in P&L. So that's what I'm saying. There's a 650 crore suggesting.
Yes, correct. Correct. Though one of, but usme pre-existing dhanaya ek to. It was just a nomenclature change. It was not new, it was not new consumption.
So basically, if I were to see that 1,700 crore, 13 crore reduction you have seen,
correct.
What is the sort of an, so now at one value, including cash,
haircut on that is 30%.
Is now down to about 50 crores.
It's about 500 crores. It's a little under, it's under 500 crores. It is not, it's not 650 crores, if that's the question you're asking.
Okay.
500 crores.
Thanks.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and 1 on your touchtone phone. Our next question comes from the line of Subhranshu Mishra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, just one question. Why do we have so many subsidiaries and joint ventures? The sheer number of subsidiaries, when I look at the notes to count, is almost the count is close to 20. And the joint ventures, again, we've got like 5 or 6. This creates a whole host of network of so many subsidiaries. One holdco, whereas when we look at the core business, it's limited, largely limited to lending. So why do we, question here is that when someone looks at from an accounting perspective, this doesn't look, seem right. So just wanted some clarity on so many subsidiaries and joint ventures and associates. Thanks.
Yeah, no, thanks for your question. See, this, some of this or a lot of this is an artifact of what our history is. We are a very, very old company, have been around for decades. Only the last few years have been as a standalone financial services company. For decades, we have existed as a conglomerate with businesses in lots of different areas. So over time, a lot of those subsidiaries have been, have been accumulated. But ever since we became a financial services specialist company, we have been simplifying, and we, if you look at our subsidiaries, number of subsidiaries today versus what they were, let's say, 3 years ago, you will see a pretty drastic reduction. And the same will continue happening as we now merge Piramal Enterprises with Piramal Capital and Housing Finance and create this new company, Piramal Finance, even more simplification will happen. So we are committed to actually continuing to simplify the corporate structure, and we have already done a lot of that over the last couple of years, and you should expect to continue to see that going forward. Your point is absolutely right that it is not common for financial services companies to have this many subsidiaries, but please recall that we are a many decade old company which has been in financial services only somewhat recently. So that's the legacy that you're seeing there, but it will all get cleaned up.
Right. If I have to push this question just one step forward, is there a deadline to which we can see clear simplification of this structure?
See, we are working with the regulator on this, and the regulator has their own kind of view of what we need to do, and some of the subsidiaries, because they are in other jurisdictions outside of India and they have their own sort of regulatory architecture, it is not possible for me as management to just give a deadline on this. We are working hard towards simplifying it and working with all the various jurisdictional authorities to simplify. Having said this, from a materiality standpoint, there, as PCHFL and PEL merge, the only real kind of, associate that you really need to care about probably is Pramerica, and the joint ventures with Bain on the alternative side. That's about it. The rest of the stuff is not at all material.
Thanks. Look forward to our simplification of the structure.
Thanks. And thank you for the push. Appreciate it.
Thank you. The next question comes from Kunal Shah from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. So firstly, again, getting on to the provisioning on the wholesale. So when we look at the rundown, which has been there on a quarter-on-quarter basis, it seems like the larger proportion is still like almost 600 odd crores out of that is SRs. Okay, so would it be fair to assume that maybe the knock which is being there of almost like say closer to 500 odd crores, that's because of the composition wherein SRs itself are coming off? Because earlier you have been indicating that 20% should be the good quantum with respect to the haircut, and we have seen a slightly higher proportion, and now maybe when we look at it in the next 3 months, we are again expecting closer to like 2,800 odd crores of rundown, because it would be at the accelerated pace. Then should we be worried about the more provisioning out there?
Right. So if you look at the roughly 1,700 crores of reduction this time, Kunal, 600 crores of reduction is from SRs, 600 crore reduction is from stage 1 and stage 2 assets,
yeah.
200 crore reduction is in stage 3, and about 150 crores each in land and AIF. That's mota moti the 1700 crores, right?
Yeah.
So SRs is roughly a third of what has happened. Your point is right that the haircut percentage in SR has been a little bit higher than in the other categories. That point is correct. But yeah, sort of mix every quarter, the mix will be a little bit different. See, we have now brought the book down from 43,000 crores to 10,000 crores, and our haircut through this entire process has been 24-25%. We have been showing the haircut percentage to you all for a few quarters, and you know that FY23 and FY24 cumulatively our haircut percentage was about 25%. This year, so far, in the 9 months so far, our haircut percentage is 24%. Now, quarter on quarter, it can be a little bit volatile, but mota moti, it has been about 25%. The haircut has been about 25%. Now, we have 10,000 crores remaining of the book. You can apply your assessment on if, let us say, 10,000 crores is eventually going to finish over the next, let's say, year or so at about 2,000 or 3,000 crores, which is the residual book, let us say, the good quality book which we will live with. Then, jo bhi 7-8,000 crore ka jo delta lena hai, usme kitna extra provision lagega, aap apni taraf se, you can do some sensitivity analysis on that. We have 1,800 crores of provisions on the book. Whatever is delta over and above that will need to be funded through some of the other pockets of value that we have mentioned in the past. That's probably the best way to kind of look at it.
Yeah. So again, when we look at it this time, it's getting offset from AIF recoveries. Okay. So that's primarily offsetting. So whatever has been the gain on the AIF, that's offsetting the provisioning on the wholesale. And I think that's what you have been indicating as well, that maybe the AIF recoveries or maybe any stake sale gain,
correct,
that would be utilized more towards this kind of an haircut. And at least in PNL, there will not be any further impact. So would that be the right assumption again?
That is the right assumption. Yes.
4% does not include AIF.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry?
That's a fair assumption. What you're saying is fair. And this is the way we have, see, that's the way we have played it the last few quarters as well, is that over the last 4 or 5 quarters, you have seen us do this, that we have not allowed net worth to get impaired. So net worth has been protected and has continued to increase. You saw our capital adequacy actually improve by 40 basis points during the course of this quarter, even though the book has grown by 16% YOY. So you saw capital adequacy improve. That's because of this angle, that we are protecting the net worth by making sure that any incremental kind of haircuts that are coming in are getting offset by any other sort of one-time gains that we have.
Sure. And getting on to the growth businesses, so again, the credit cost has risen by almost like 30 odd basis points. That primarily seems to be MFI. But again, when I look at it, maybe at least there has been uptick on the salaried PL as well as digital loans. Digital loans, you have, in terms of the disbursements as well, digital loans are up. So you have been indicating that you are you would be getting more comfortable and start to do this business. But the overall operating environment, I think most of the lenders are still suggesting that there is some worry on this segment, and even on the business loans. Okay, this is again unsecured. So we would have seen some part of it on the microfinance side wherein we are taking the knock. But again, these three segments continue to grow. So would there be more worry in terms of the overall growth businesses, credit cost also inching up? And where would you see the steady state level in this kind of an environment?
See, we have stated in the past as well that the business that we are building is kind of roughly a 2% credit cost business. Nothing much has changed there. Nothing that has happened in the last few quarters has changed our mind on that. This quarter, you saw the growth book credit cost go up from 1.6% to 1.9%. Not a big delta. The businesses that you mentioned, you're absolutely right. Like, we will try not to be pro-cyclical with respect to these businesses. It is our job to take a call on where we see risk. At this point, I feel comfortable with the profile of risk that we are able to book in the digital side. So we are starting to get a little bit comfortable. I think you and I spoke about this a few months ago where I said that we might start doing more on digital. You see a little bit of that in the third quarter. We saw a tiny bit of increase in that. Business loans, we are not quite there yet. So you saw a big steep fall in business loans in Q3 versus Q2. We are not quite there to where I can assert with any confidence that we are there. So business loans might still take a little bit of time, but salaried personal loans, I continue to feel pretty good. I think the business is holding up very well, and both horizontally and vertically, the risks are holding on quite nicely. If you see our charts on page 20 and 19 and 20, both of them show, one shows vertical and one shows horizontal risk, and you can see kind of the how we are feeling about the various products and salaried personal loans, for example. You can see the very low levels and continuing to stay down, and Q3 was actually even better than Q2 in terms of horizontal risk in salaried personal loans. So I continue to feel good about both salaried PL and digital. Business loans and microfinance, not so much. We are still in a pretty tough territory there.
Okay. And even excluding MFI, the business loan disbursements would have been down. So what we are seeing from, say, 1155 to 736.
Yeah. So 11 for usme se na, the delta of because of
MFI is almost 640.
Probably,
yeah,
MFI delta is probably 150 crores. The rest of the delta is all business loans ka delta. The total delta is about 400 crores, of which about 150 is MFI ka delta and bucket 250 is business loans ka delta.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks and all the best. Yeah.
Thank you, Bruno.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, please press star and 1 to join the question queue. Our next question comes from the line of Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Jairam.
Hi,
just one question. Just one question I had, in terms of all the product segments that we have, secured or unsecured, I think, I mean, sometime last quarter, there were conversations happening with regards to spillovers from microfinance in secured segments. So have we seen any such spillovers in our secured segments, or is it like large part of the spillovers that are being seen from microfinance are restricted to only the unsecured segments?
Yeah. So I've been, I must say, positively surprised. We have not seen spillovers yet. So I don't want to jinx it, but so far, not really. The secured side seems to be holding very steady. So housing, LAP, you know, everything is just holding up pretty steady. And actually, Q3 was pretty decent as well. December in particular was quite strong. And as we speak, January is looking pretty good as well. So not looking like a spillover thing yet. So no, that is so far not so much. It seems pretty contained, at least right now.
Got it. And just one last question that I had was, while we spoke about some hidden pockets of value, we've been utilizing that, basically the AIF recoveries to ensure that the network is not impaired while we are running down the legacy AU. The other pockets of opportunity that you have spoken about in the past, right, are there any updates on that? I mean, maybe not necessarily a direct update, but directionally, how are we thinking about it?
Yeah, so AIF we already spoke about, and we continue to make progress on that. We'll continue to see more AIF recoveries in Q4 and in FY26 as well. Then we've got the stakes in the two Shriram insurance companies, Life and General, where again we have been open about our intent to see them as financial investments and exit them at the appropriate time. As these are unlisted entities, it's a little bit more complex, and you need to do some structured transactions to actually get out. There have been some organizational or corporate level restructurings in those entities, which has helped make things a little bit easier. However, there is no specific update for me to share with you right now. There's no specific deal or conversation that is sort of on the table. But our old guidance on this stands, which is that you should continue to expect us to be available as a potential seller to exit this in the moment the right opportunity presents itself. Likely in FY26, but we're not setting a particular timeline on that. There is of course the incremental item that we had shared recently, which is the $140 million of deferred consideration that's available to us in FY26. That's a new pocket of value that has emerged in recent weeks. Again, all these are very different from AIF type stuff, which we have talked about in the past as potential offsets for legacy asset side issues. Some of these items are more direct value creation items. So we have that as well. So between that and the stakes in the life insurance entities, and of course our tax shield that is available to us from the past, those are the pockets of value that continue to remain available to us.
Got it. And while you gave a very good color on this, Aram, just wanted to understand in terms of growth on the retail side, are we still thinking just organic growth?
See, you know, the Piramal Group has had kind of M&A in its DNA, so we are always happy to consider M&A transactions as and when they present themselves. And our areas of interest, where we'd like to see or like to seek M&A transactions also remain the same, which is MFI Small Business Gold. And there is no deal conversation that's going on right now, which we can offer any update on. But yes, we continue to remain interested in those areas. But as of now, the bulk of our strategy is going to remain organic, with us opportunistically looking at inorganic transactions if and when something interesting presents itself.
Got it. This is useful, Jairam. Thank you so much, and wish you and your team the very best.
Thank you, Abhijit.
Thank you. The next question comes from Rohit Jain from Tara Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Good evening. I have a question on the borrowing mix. I see that the percentage of ECB has gone up quite decently over the last few quarters. Now, given an environment where INR is depreciating, can you help us understand the dynamic of this, avenue of borrowing? I mean, what is the hedge cost and how does it change given the INR depreciation? And is it still better than borrowing in the domestic market?
So right now, Rohit, we are fully hedged. So, and we hedge it at the point when we do the transaction. We don't keep naked exposures. So we hedge it at that point. And when we did these transactions, our hedging costs were about 2.5%. We entered into the hedge. So the depreciation rupee has zero impact on us right now. Of course, as rupee depreciates, the hedge cost itself might change over time. If we were to do a new transaction and enter into a new hedging deal, then the story will be a little bit different. But our old borrowing that we did during the earlier part of this year, nothing changes about them in terms of their impact to us.
So, I mean, let's say as and when they mature, if hypothetically you were to replace them with domestic borrowings in case this becomes slightly more, let's say, expensive, then would it net-net be able to think about that dynamic?
Yeah, no. So basically, the way we hedge it is we have hedged for the, for the duration of the loan. So effectively, as far as I'm concerned, it is a rupee borrowing, effectively. So it doesn't matter to us what happens to the USD INR at this point for those loans. Of course, if you want to do a new borrowing transaction, then it does matter. But for those old borrowings, nothing changes. Like, they are locked in the, at rupee rates.
No, I get that. I mean, I'm just trying to understand what's the duration of these tenure of some of these borrowings?
3 years.
3 years. And so the ones that were borrowed, let's say, in, FY24 or something, they still have, decent couple of years before that becomes an issue for you.
Yeah, that's right. Our first significant borrowing was in June of this year. So we have a ways to go. So June 27 is when they will come up, or July 27 is when they will come up.
Got it. Thank you. Helpful. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rohit.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question comes from the line of Vikas Kasturi from Focus Capital. I'm sorry. The next question comes from the line of Rishabh Bajaj from 360 ONE Wealth. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, everyone. I just wanted to ask, how do you see the credit environment going forward? Like, do you see incremental stress, or do you feel like it's possible that we could see a peak out in credit risk?
Right now, I'm leaning a little bit towards the latter of what you said. Very cautiously, I would say that it looks like Q4 is going to look somewhat similar to Q3. So Q4, you're not going to see a reduction. You're going to see Q4 kind of similar to Q3, but it's not increasing. And even if you see within the quarter, the December trends were actually a lot better than October and November. So if you look at things on a three-month moving average basis, and by the way, January is coming in at similar levels to December or even better. So on a three-month moving average basis, it looks like things have peaked. But these things tend to shift, so I don't want to draw too much from it just now. But I mentioned to an earlier caller that we're not seeing spillover effects into other product lines, and resolution rates seem to be improving within the product lines that were stressed. So putting these two together, it looks like Q4 kind of somewhat similar to Q3, maybe even tad higher, maybe, but kind of looks more or less the same. And and if that ends up being the case, maybe it is it's looking a little bit more like the peak than not. But I wouldn't assert it with a lot of confidence yet. Let a month or two more go, then we will feel a lot more confident about it. I can just say that December was pretty decent, and January is turning out to be pretty decent.
Okay, and in terms of the long-term ROA guidance, are we on track to meet that? And
our growth book, you saw the pro forma PBT ROA was 1.4%. As the legacy book keeps running down and becomes irrelevant over the course of the next few quarters, the growth book, the PBT profile will start becoming more and more front page. And you'll see that. You can see that our yields are holding steady, and consol basis yields are even increasing. You can see that our cost of borrowing has peaked. Fee income is starting to rise, OPEX continues to come down on a regular basis, and if credit costs sort of peak out at around these levels or kind of in Q4, then pretty much secularly you see that all the metrics are favorably aligned. So so we feel confident about the medium-term guidance that we have offered, and nothing changes on that front.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rishabh.
Thank you. We'll take the last question from the line of Vikas Kasturi from Focus Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Moderator, am I audible?
Yes, yes, Vikas, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Sir, I have a couple of questions. So first is our Pramerica holding. What is the strategy there, sir? A long-term strategy? Is it to grow the insurance book aggressively, and then maybe list it separately or exit that business? Because I'm sure even the regulator will ask you this question. So some broad guidance on that strategy.
Yeah, see, on Pramerica, we are 50% owners and listed as promoters. You know, for IRDA guidelines, promoters need to remain for a 5-year period. We have been there for 3 years now. Your question is a valid one about what in the long term do we see ourselves as strategic owners or not. We continue to have internal conversations on it. We are not asserting long-term strategy at this point on this. All options are open. Having said that, right now our job is to actually get that company to a certain level of scale launch the right products, have certain segments in which there is some dominant position, so that value is created. How we monetize that value, we will see. But right now, the job is pretty simple and cut out, which is to focus on value generation in that entity. It will remain very small and somewhat irrelevant in the larger scheme of things for us for a little while. But once a little bit of value gets created, then we will figure out the right kind of strategic path for it.
Okay, sir. My second question is on your branch strategy, sir. You had mentioned in one of the slides that the rate of addition is kind of slowing down. And so my question to you would be that, sir, given that branches tend to be the engines of growth, so why would you want to slow it down? You know, you'd rather want to have more branches, and because over time they will mature and help you grow faster. So that is my question, sir.
Yeah, so thanks for that question, Rishabh. See, these things, you should think of this as sort of a little bit of a caterpillar movement. Sometimes you will see a lot of branch expansion and sometimes you will see that slowing down. And it tends to happen based on what your primary criterion is. For the next year and a half, our focus is going to continue to remain on operating leverage and making sure that we are able to deliver returns from the 200-250 odd branches that we have opened in the last couple of years, just making sure that they come up to the right productivity levels, that we are able to actually show the returns on that from a continued reduction in OPEX ratios, etc. If we are able to deliver that, we will come back to branch growth as well. But right now, I think the time is for us to actually demonstrate productivity improvements and OPEX improvements on the investments that we have already made, rather than continue to make any more investments. But this is the strategy for the next few quarters. We will see that will continue to evolve.
Got
Thank
it,
you
sir.
For your question.
And final question, sir. Sir, on your retail to wholesale ratio, which you've given as a sort of a long-term guidance of 75-25, and given that retail is growing very fast and wholesale, you are shrinking your legacy book. So we might actually end up with something like maybe 85-15 or something, sir, given this kind of growth rate. So, would you still want to get it back to 75-25? My question is that kind of set in stone, or is it just like a moving target?
I'd say that, nothing in business is set in stone, but I would say that our desire is for retail proportion to be 75-80%. It's unlikely that we would want it to be a lot more than that. So yes, it is possible that in the short term, because of continued wind down of the legacy book, in the short term it is possible that we overshoot the 75-25. But even the sort of medium term, you should expect us to come back to somewhere, retail being somewhere between 75 and 80. It's unlikely that we will be too different from that ratio.
So you might even slow down the retail then, sir?
No, I don't think we'll need to slow anything down. I think organically, the numbers will take care of themselves. I think we know what the size of the opportunity is in wholesale for somebody like us with our rating, and we know what the opportunity size is in retail, and we believe that an optimal mix of 75-25 or 80-20 will kind of work out.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you for all your answers.
Yeah.
Look forward to speaking with you again next.
Thank you. And on this last point, since the caller asked about growth, I want to reiterate that, you know, you've seen the consolidated growth of Piramal increase quarter on quarter over the last multiple quarters. This quarter we delivered our, if I'm not mistaken, it must be like 3-year high of growth at 16% YOY. And we continue to feel optimistic about delivering strong growth, even in an environment in which growth has been relatively slow for the market, and to be able to do that in a way that is fairly risk protected. And you should continue to expect to see, you know, fairly contained risk outcomes on the growth book, even as we deliver this, you know, these growth levels. Thank you for all those questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for the day. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jairam Sridharan for his closing comments.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I've had one or two questions on messaging platforms. Somebody's asked a question about 24%, the haircut. Sorry, let me just take 30 seconds to clarify. The 24% haircut that we have mentioned for this year, the 9 months, is without netting off the AIF impact. Just to be clear, that's the gross level impact, and then we have netted off we have set that off against AIF gains that we have done. So this is a gross number, not a net number. Just because one or two people wrote about this on messaging platform, just clarifying this. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the call patiently. And for any further questions, do reach out to Ravi and team in our investor relations organization. Thank you, and have a great evening.
Thank you. On behalf of Piramal Enterprises Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your line.